right. I'm very pleased to be here, and thank you very much for coming in this late afternoon session. And I hope I'll be able to get you excited a little bit here. So today I'm going to talk about neighborhood socioeconomic status and access to primary care. I don't have any disclosures or financial relationships, and I would like to start by thanking my my co-authors, Anna and Rob, who have been great resource for me as I worked on this project, and also would like to thank the Diaz-Roux Research Group at Drexel University and our Urban Health Collaborative, especially Carrie Moore, Stephen Mellie, and Katie Livingood. So I'm going to start by talking about the neighborhood as a determinant of access to care. As I will show, most of the literature in health services research has focused on individual level determinants of access, including income, race, socioeconomic status, and insurance status, most importantly. And then I'm going to talk about variation in the type of usual source of care by neighborhood socioeconomic status. I'm going to describe our methods that we use to answer our research questions, which are primarily a multi-level analysis of really rich local data in Philadelphia, which if you get interested about it, it's very easy to access and find collaborators in the Philadelphia area. And then I'm going to list our main findings and some of the implications for research and policy in the Affordable Care Act environment. So primary care access is really one of the major aspects that you could describe a healthcare system with. And the key measure, the typically used measure for primary care access is whether people have an identifiable usual source of care. And that reflects their perceived access and also to a little extent their historical utilization. So people could tell you that I use a physician's office, and that's really my usual source of care. It also means that they have used it in the past, probably. A usual source of care is very important because it ensures a timely access to preventive and curative modes of treatment. It also offers opportunities for coordination of care received from specialists and other providers. And also it offers an opportunity to convert care, the typically delivered healthcare, into a patient-centered one by focusing on the whole patient. There's also evidence that showed that having a usual source of care might be a source for reducing or mitigating the negative health effects of social disadvantage. Nonetheless, there has been a lot of documentation that there is existing disparities, quite large disparities, in the probability of having a usual source of care by individual demographic characteristics, by income, by insurance or insurance status, and also by racial ethnic minority status. And that has been documented all the way to the National Healthcare Disparities Report of 2014. The safety net, I don't know why my slides are... There's quite a bit of missing information from this slide. But nonetheless, so the safety net of community health centers and outpatient clinics and free and charitable clinics have been taking a good part in providing care for the underserved, for these underserved populations, and basically closing the access chasm between the haves and the have-nots, particularly community health centers. So as I said, the predominant focus in the health service literature has been on individual level factors as determinants of access to health care, although sociological theory, most famously the Anderson model of health service utilization, show that or posit that the neighborhood environment and the community environment is also important for access to health care. And there's also a wealth of neighborhood health effects research that points to probable mechanisms by which the neighborhood could also affect access to care as well, beyond the individual level factors. So if you think about society and how it's organized and stratified, individuals are typically stratified by socioeconomic status, by race, and then they get sorted into neighborhoods that also vary along these structural determinants. So neighborhoods vary in terms of their own socioeconomic status and level of development. And what follows is also variation in the quality of the built and social environment of these neighborhoods, you know, the amenities that are available to residents, including healthcare resources, and also residents' behaviors. From a healthcare standpoint, residents of particular neighborhoods, of say low-income neighborhoods, are more likely to be sorted into distinct healthcare markets that have particular levels of supply of providers, perhaps different quality of providers from neighborhoods that are potentially better off. And then the other mechanism, which unfortunately not showing on the slide, is social capital. So you can think about the existing social resources within neighborhoods as a potential mechanism linking neighborhood socioeconomic status with individuals' access to care through community participation and political advocacy for more healthcare resources, through information networks that facilitate awareness and access to perhaps, you know, culturally competent sources of care or screening campaigns or whatnot. So prior work on neighborhood SES and access has been quite limited. Very few studies have looked particularly at the association of neighborhood socioeconomic status and access to care. Some of the examples include, most importantly, Auchincloss in 2001. They showed that living in a poor neighborhood is associated with a 5% increase in access problems. Kirby and Kaneda, in a national study, they showed that one standard deviation increase in neighborhood socioeconomic disadvantage is associated with about 13% lower likelihood of having a usual source of care, and that is above and beyond individuals' own access to individuals' own socioeconomic status and insurance. So why are we interested in looking at neighborhoods as a determinant of access again? Well, first, a lot of these studies were limited in terms of first lumping together the types of usual sources of care that people can have. People can have a physician provider or a physician office as their usual source of care. They can have a community health center or an outpatient clinic. And these usual sources of care, or these providers, they vary in their geographic localization, they vary in their characteristics and their target populations and their accepted forms of insurance. So there is a lot to really learn by parsing out these types of usual sources of care. These studies were also likely underpowered to test interactions with between neighborhood SES and these potential mechanisms of that link neighborhood to access to care, most importantly supply. And also, there was a lot of other empirically related, modeling-related mechanisms. And perhaps most importantly of all, we know very little about how the disparity in access to care between low-income and high-income neighborhoods have changed over time. And in this study, we have considered the decade from 2002 all the way to 2012, where, for example, the beginning of the decade was the growth initiative of community health centers, and the end of the decade was, you know, as you would expect, the Great Recession, which loomed from 2007 on. And that is very important when we consider the effects of the Affordable Care Act and the expected changes in primary care supply, delivery, and payment, which can also be spatially, which can differ to important extents spatially, geographically, given the baseline variations already there in terms of neighborhoods, again, socioeconomic status and levels of supply and providers. Our research questions, we looked at three important research questions. The first was, to what extent is the type of the usual source of care an individual has is independently associated with the SES of their own neighborhood, and that is beyond individuals' own socioeconomic status, race, and income, and insurance. And whether this association has changed over time, and whether this association, this disparity between neighborhoods in access to care, is different by the level of provider supply in the areas where neighborhoods lie. So I'm an epidemiologist and also an economist. Now I'm really sorry about how this is completely messed up, but nonetheless. So we constructed a DAG, which is what epidemiologists generally do, to translate literature, information from the literature into a conceptual framework, and this really helped us help guide our statistical modeling. And you can see here the mechanisms I was talking about. This is neighborhood socioeconomic status, people get into a particular neighborhood by virtue of their own individual SES, by their race, and then neighborhood SES also affects primary care access through the social environment, through healthcare supply, and other factors. So our data, we used local data from the Household Health Survey of Southeastern Pennsylvania from 2002-2012, and we linked respondents' data to census tract data and provider supply data in the primary care service areas. Our outcome was the type of usual source of care individuals had, whether no usual source of care, a physician's office, a community health center, or an outpatient clinic. Neighborhood socioeconomic status, we measured that using the census tract median household income. And then we also considered covariates, including provider supply in the primary care service area, and also other confounders, including, which are unfortunately not showing on the slide, including individual and neighborhood compositional characteristics. This is our multi-level, multinomial model, and we harvested the probabilities, and we really used the predicted probabilities to estimate the associations. And then I wanted to bring that up front. So some of the limitations with the study is that there might be generalizability concerns, given we're just looking at Philadelphia, but we have very large sample size and wide variation in neighborhoods. And so hopefully what we see is more of general trends than something specific to Philadelphia. This was also a phone survey, although we have a very large sample size. The response rate was about 20%, and a number of other limitations that you could look at. I believe the slides and the handouts are available online for your reference. So if you look at this table, you see that the type of the usual source of care really is linearly patterned by neighborhood income. If you look at, for example, the physician's office, this is the prevalence of having a physician office as a usual source of care in low-income neighborhoods. These are quintile one neighborhoods, the lowest quintile. And the percent or the prevalence increases as neighborhood income increases, and it's really stark. The disparity between very low and higher income neighborhoods is really stark, even relative to neighborhoods in the second lowest quintiles. There's about 16 or 15 percentage point difference in the likelihood of having a usual source of care. And these are all just crude, unadjusted. On the other hand, there is a very high level of reliance on safety net providers, such as community health centers or public clinics and hospital outpatient departments, that also wanes all the way down as neighborhood income increases. So it goes all the way from about 14 to about 1 percentage point, or about 1% of residents. This is a map of Philadelphia. There's a lot that can be gleaned from this map. This is Philadelphia, and this is its suburbs. And the dark color is neighborhood income. And as you can see, there's a lot of poverty in Philadelphia. And with that, the crosses are community health centers. I don't know if you can see from here, but the crosses are community health centers, and there's a lot of those. There's in poor areas. There's much less of physicians, although physicians tend to be more concentrated in higher income areas. This is, on the other hand, the typical usual source of care in each of these neighborhoods. And as you can tell, these poor neighborhoods are also the least in their likelihood of having a physician office as your usual source of care. But nonetheless, they tend to rely more on community health centers and outpatient clinics. So this is our multivariable analysis. And in a nutshell, once you adjust for confounders, there's really no neighborhood variation in the probability of lacking a usual source of care. But the type of usual source of care does vary by neighborhood socioeconomic status. And if you look at physician offices, for example, living in a low-income neighborhood is associated with about 4 percentage points less likelihood of having a physician office as the usual source of care relative to high-income neighborhoods. And if you consider community health centers and outpatient departments or outpatient clinics, it's almost exactly the opposite. Being in a low-income neighborhood has a higher association, makes you, not really makes you, that's more of a causal language, but living in a higher-income neighborhood increases the likelihood of having a community health center or an outpatient department as your usual source of care by about 2 percentage points. So this is about 2, and this is also close to 2. This hasn't changed over time, has been stable for the most part since 2002. And the less likelihood or the lower likelihood of seeking care at a physician's office if you're in a low-income neighborhood increases when the level of provider supply in the area decreases, and you can see that from this middle graph right there. So our key findings are above and beyond the individual's own SES, race, or insurance, living in a low-income neighborhood has persistently been associated with no different probability of lacking a USC, lower probability of having a physician office UC, and higher probability of reliance on the safety net. And this has been going on in the same way over time. These findings are consistent with a lot of the literature on access to care. And we posit also that provider characteristics are an important mechanism driving this association between neighborhood SES and access. So I think the take-home message from this study is that safety net providers exert more or less of a compensatory effect on access to care. So while people in low-income neighborhoods are less likely to have a physician's office as their usual source of care, the available safety net providers compensate for that lower access by providing these populations with the usual source of care. But nonetheless, the safety net is a challenge under the Affordable Care Act with the increasing demand by the newly insured population and also by financial strain and under-resourced environment that not only limit their ability to continue to ensure equitable access, but also limit their ability to innovate in better quality of care and participate in quality-improving coalitions such as accountable care organizations. So, in a nutshell, our policy proposals or our policy and research recommendations that we really need to monitor equity and access across neighborhoods as the Affordable Care Act implementation proceeds. And also we should consider three particular policy proposals as we go forward to ensure the viability and health, financial health of the safety net by ensuring adequate federal funding for these providers. And also looking at considering and reconsidering Medicaid expansion reforming Medicaid reimbursement, because Medicaid accounts for about 40% of the revenue of these institutions, and also extend provider supply to severely underserved areas. So that's all. Thank you so much for listening.
You have about a minute 30 seconds for questions.
Okay. The handouts are available online if you would like to take a better look at them. I'm sorry for how they were missed out.
I was wondering, what the next questions would you have for your known issue? I know one from you is understanding perceptions of users in the quality of care and their level of feeling confident in access to care, but I'm curious.
Yeah, I think one important question is, so there's a lot of things going on with the Affordable Care Act implementation, and as things move forward, we really need to consider how these institutions, these safety net providers, are faring under the Affordable Care Act from a quality standpoint. They are under-resourced and financially strained, and with more demand for care, they are becoming even more strained. And I don't think there is enough funding or sources of revenue for them to continue on, to continue to serve the populations they intend to serve. There is disparities by neighborhood. There are disparities by individual level covariates or individual level characteristics, as I mentioned, that also need to be monitored in terms of the services and the quality of services that these institutions provide.
Thank you.